Hello, everyone. This is JVL here with my best friends, Sarah Longwell and Tim Miller of The Bulwark. And guys, we got a very special episode for you because last night, my best friend, Sarah Longwell, got her very own John Fetterman. It was great.
I'm the only one out there without one so far.
You don't have one.
Congrats, guys.
You don't have one. Last night, Sarah's John Fetterman, this is a deep, deep cut for people who are new here. Governor of Michigan, Big Gretchen Whitmer was at a base rededication with the president of these United States, Donald J. Trump. And they had a bunch of military people, National Guard airmen, and women situated in camo fatigues behind them as human props, because that's a totally cool thing to do. And Big Gretch was there with her camo hat, like a supersized Christie gnome. And Donald Trump called her up, and she walked up to the stage and shook his hand and thanked him and told him how grateful she was.
And then hugged him.
Was there a real hug?
There was a hug. Oh yeah.
We'll have to go to the tape on that.
We're gonna have to go to the tape. I was calling it more of a handshake and pat kind of thing.
A grip and grin.
I saw a hug.
Okay. So I have so many questions, but I want to start with you, Sarah. How are you feeling about Big Gretch should have been the Democratic nominee in 2024?
I stand by that. Here's the thing.
There was a different hug. I'm sorry. We're just going to the tape here. There were two encounters. There was a handshake and a shoulder pat as well as a hug. The hug was off the plane.
Oh.
Yeah, that was a tarmac meeting that included a hug as well. So there were two. She physically touched Donald Trump two times.
By choice.
By choice.
The only woman ever to not be paid who willingly touched him twice. Not for money. Although I guess kind of for money.
Okay, stop. All right. Now we're too far. Here's I want to just set this up.
Money
really
for her state, Sarah.
Yeah, I
meant
I know.
Money for her state.
I know
state.
What I gotcha. Here's the thing, because you said for people who are new
Gretchen
here.
Gretchen 2028, there's nothing I won't
understand.
Do for Michigan.
Stop it.
I'm going to let Sarah talk.
You know why? This is why it's impossible to be a female politician, because suddenly everything is put through a prism of sexuality. Okay?
Yeah, like that doesn't happen again.
I don't even mean sexuality. I just mean actually made physical contact with the giant orange oleaginous fellow. But go ahead.
So the actual backdrop of this comment from JVL is that JVL for a very long time insisted that John Fetterman was because this was back when I was a Connor Lamb, because I love my centrist Democrats, and when Connor Lamb and Fetterman were running against each other in the primary, the Democratic primary in Pennsylvania, I was Lamb, JVL was Fetterman, and JVL did a lot of like Fetterman forever, Fetterman for the presidency.
Would you say
Fetterman's everything?
Two dozen pieces Lamb. On this?
Yeah, like you wrote a lot
maybe,
of love.
Maybe two.
Love
I will set the over under at two dozen Fetterman love pieces.
Yeah, and I would say like, where do you stand on Fetterman now? Like, should he run in 2028
for president? No.
For Senate again?
For Senate, sure.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
There are some listeners and some viewers here, and we'll accept your Connor Lamb apologies in the comment section.
Yeah. And speaking of Pennsylvania, in 2028, I was a Shapiro Whitmer was my, or sorry, 2024. Shapiro Whitmer, my preferred ticket, had they done the right thing and had a primary. And since they didn't, I wish they had, but even if they didn't, she should have picked Josh Shapiro as her vice president. And those are two things that I stand by and will not retract. Here's what I will say. You live, you learn. And we are watching Gretchen Whitmer go from like rising star who had Joe Biden picked as his vice president, which she was shortlisted to be back in 2020. I think he would have been in a much better position to step down once it became clear he was not up to the job, not up to running again. And voters also knew that. Gretchen Whitmer, I think, might have been a pretty good choice for his legacy there. Instead, he chose Kamala Harris for whatever reason, and then decided to like give her the crappiest jobs, behave the crappiest to her, and then undermine her at every turn and make it impossible for her to run when he became so cognitively.
Not that you're bitter about this. Okay.
Now we're on a different thing. I'm moving on.
I also did 8 minutes of this with Tony Blinken this morning. So I think we have a full, like, I think we, it's covered on the Bulwark, our views on this point. So yes. let's continue with Gretchen.
Okay. Fair enough. So Gretchen Whitmer just to me has been displaying an unending list of political malpractice. It began with her saying, oh, is Trump getting just absolutely pilloried on tariffs? Perhaps now is a good time. I haven't said anything in the first 100 days. I haven't said anything about the deportations or the stock market crashing or the, you know, the judge hadn't been jailed yet, but like, whatever. I'm not going to say anything about that. But is Trump in trouble on tariffs? Let me vouch for him. Let me jump in and explain why tariffs, when exercised properly, can be good. We get it. You're a Midwestern governor. Your state, you know, the shifting in the way that our economy approaches manufacturing has been tough for your state. I get it. But it was just, I was shocked by that. And then for her to go into the Oval Office while Trump was signing executive orders, specifically to go after his political enemies like Chris Krebs, who's big thing that he did was to say that the 2020 election was free and fair and not stolen. And you just stand there and cover your face with a binder while the photographers are there. Okay, that's strike two. And now we get this. And this is, I'm going to literally hug Trump. I'm going to, now the reason she was meeting with Trump in the Oval Office was to get this thing, right? It was the base that she wanted money for. He gave it to her. And now she's doing this like buddy buddy thing with him. And look, there are a million ways to have handled all of these things. Like if she was in the Oval Office, she could have walked out when he started signing executive orders attacking people for no reason, having the DOJ investigate them, recognize the authoritarian impulse. Immediately she catapults and rockets to front runner in 2028. But because she's failed to stand up to him, she has, maybe this is a good move for Michigan, or maybe she feels like she's doing the right thing for her state. It's the same way that CBS thinks it's doing the right thing for the Paramount merger, and the way that Columbia thinks it's doing the right thing for its board, and the way that these law firms think they're doing the right thing for their clients, all by caving and buddying up with Trump. I will tell you that is not what time it is in the Democratic Party or in the broader pro-democracy movement. Anybody who's going to basically provide cover for this guy over bespoke little like policy issues or funding issues and then alibi him in the broader authoritarian project, you're done. You're toast. Gretchen Whitmer has shown really, really poor judgment. And I do not think she should be the 2028 nominee for sure.
I also don't think that there's really, nobody has presented me. And we talked to Jonathan Cohen last night about this, who's our, you know, new policy guy who's in Michigan and knows this stuff and is maybe a little less, and he's more liberal on policy than us, maybe a little less strident about the politics of this, you know, just temperamentally. But even he, like, I can't find anybody to give me, and I have friends that worked for Whitmer, like, can give me a reason, like, why, like, she absolutely had to do this to get this, these jobs, at this base there, right? Like, there are other ways. I can understand if you're pitching me and you're saying, hey, I'm Whitmer's advisor. Like, she's got to be governor. 28's a long time away. Like, we're just going to kind of do our job here in the state. And, you know, she's not going to talk about Trump that much for a while. And like, we don't want to get crosswise with him. We want to get this federal funding. Again, this wouldn't be my approach, but that's at least defensible, right? And they're like, oh, they need somebody to come to the event. I grab my lieutenant governor, Garland Gilchrist, and say, Garland, congrats. You've been named lieutenant governor. You got to go do this. We got an issue over there. There was a flood or something. I got some other business. I got to wash my hair. I can't make it there that day. Scheduling doesn't work out. Like, there are ways to do it that are not like maximum confrontation as well. Mm-hmm. Though I would prefer maximum confrontation. Yeah. And like, she just, seems to have like made a choice to not do that, like actively made a choice that this is the best thing to do. It's a choice that I think is totally wrong, that I think is bad politics, bad policy, bad ethics, just like across the board. Again, like touching Donald, like there's no situation in which I would touch Donald Trump, just as like for starters. Like I mean, there's nothing. I can't imagine something that's like, oh, my kid is going to get into the best school if as long as I just do a photo op with Donald Trump. Sorry, Toulouse, you know, LSU will do just fine. I can't imagine a situation that I would do that I would do it in. And like, I just think it's been a total whiff. And I guess my only lesson is, and I've learned this the hard way over many years, and I'd say this to listeners, and as we get into 2028, it's going to be something that I really try to guide myself on, assuming, you know, we have elections and all that, is like, you know, you're not in any of these people's heads. Making any of these people, you know, into something that they're not, into some hero, like presuming that you know, projecting what you think that they should be onto them. It's a risky business in politics. And, you know, I don't know. I mean, I probably know Pete the best out of all the people that are going to be 2028, but like, I don't know Pete that well, you know, like we've been to one dinner together. Like, I don't, you know what I mean? And so just like having a little bit of remove, I think is probably smart. Smart lesson for everybody, because it's tempting to like put on the jersey of somebody and like be like, this is my guy or my
gal. To be fair, I've never put on the Whitmer jersey.
I never said you were.
No, JBL was.
Yeah. What's that? You think JBL put on the Fetterman jersey?
I think JBL was suggesting that I had.
I had a Fetterman face tattoo. That's totally different from a Fetterman jersey. That's wildly different, yeah. Sarah. I tattooed his face on my face.
I did think she had a lot of political potential. And I would just say, yes. much like, and so like Gavin Newsom is not for me, but also somebody you could argue had, like Gretchen Whitmer is more for me than Gavin Newsom is, but you could also argue he has a lot of political potential. And I've watched both of them over the last 6 months or so just squander so much of it by making very stupid choices.
This podcast is sponsored by Naked Wines. If you ever wanted to learn more about wine but can't figure out where to start, or when you do start, it feels like too much, our next partner, Naked Wines, has changed the game for learning about wine without having to take a whole class about it. Naked Wines is a service that connects you to the world's finest independent winemakers, so you can get award-winning wine delivered straight to your door. Use our code, THENEXTLEVEL, for the code and password at nakedwines.com and get their incredible deal of 6 bottles for just $39.99. Naked Wines connects winemakers and wine drinkers directly, allowing for vineyard-to-your-door delivery at up to 60% off what you'd pay in the store. By cutting out the traditional retail middleman costs and markups, winemakers can pass those savings on to you without skimping on quality. And don't forget, you can pause or cancel at any time. So just because you got a trip coming up or other plans or, you know, trying to do a dry January doesn't mean you can't enjoy Naked Wines before or after that much needed break. I've started to get some Naked Wines deliveries. It's been wonderful. After Jazz Fest, I'm not a wine purchaser, so it's been nice just to have some around the house. You never know. After Jazz Fest, some people came over last Thursday. Some of the ladies wanted wine. Boom, I had multiple different whites, different varietals they could choose from. And now it's the time to join the Naked Wines community. Head to nakedwines.com/thenextlevel. Click enter voucher and put in my code, THENEXTLEVEL, for both the code and password for 6 bottles of wine for just $39.99 with shipping included. That's $100 off your first 6 bottles at nakedwines.com/thenextlevel and use the code and password, THENEXTLEVEL, for 6 bottles of wine for $39.99.
So I want to attack in part and defend in part Whitmer.
Okay.
So my beef with Whitmer has never been anything other than I just thought she was a mid political talent.
Yeah.
Like I always thought she was kind of a phony and just a replacement level Democrat, or maybe high average, but like not special. I didn't see any. That's why I do not think she would have been. Like, I think she's simply not as good at politics as, say, Kamala Harris. And I think, like, again, Kamala Harris ran a really great campaign, like performed very, very well. I don't think
I'm not sure we've seen enough of Gretchen Whitmer to know. Like, well, I mean now, but I guess I mean to evaluate her against Kamala and Kamala, who, like, if you had given me that comparison, knowing what I knew about both of them 1 year ago, I would have vehemently disagreed. Based on what we had seen, and now based on what we've seen, where Kamala Harris performed extraordinarily admirably under very difficult circumstances. Not perfectly, made a lot of mistakes, but did, I think, a good job there versus what Gretchen Whitmer has done with her political capital.
But here's the defense part, though. I do not think this is necessarily bad politics for Whitmer from the point of view of Michigan. And so, like, on Friday, Sarah and I talked about Slotkin and Alyssa Slotkin doing a sort of a hippie punching bit in a speech of hers. And I think that's wrong nationally. I think it's bad politics nationally. I don't think that that is what you should do if you want to play in national politics. But it is right for Michigan, probably. And I don't think any of us should begrudge, you know, red state or close to reddish state Democrats doing what they need to win there.
She's like, term limited, need though.
John Tester.
Yeah, she's in the second term of her governorship.
Sure, but she's going to run for something else, right? Okay, but this is what I'm saying. Like, I guess what I'm saying is you need, if the Democratic Party is going to be a force for good in America, they are going to need people like John Tester who can win in places that are red. And it would be better if those people didn't have delusions about national ambitions.
Hold on a second. I'm going to disagree with this. And I hadn't thought about this, but the point about, so I'm a big defender of the John Tester and
Tim Ryan, right? Tim Ryan, John Tester, guys like that.
Well, but Tim Ryan didn't win. But what's his name from West Virginia? Help me. Manchin. Thank you. Yeah. You know, I was a big Joe Manchin and even Kyrsten Sinema defender in a way, JBL, that you were definitely not. And here's where I would defend the need for those types of people. Right. Because you lost. You're never going to get a senator, yep. Never going to get a Democratic senator in West Virginia ever again. You only had the legacy of Manchin to sort of help you there. I will say, though, those guys managed to be annoying to Democrats in lots of ways. But they didn't wrap their arms around Trump. I think that the world has changed even since then. I just think the second term of Donald Trump, what he is doing, our assessment of his authoritarian project means that, like, your bespoke political considerations, especially when, like, I actually don't even see what they are in her case, so I can't even evaluate them, like, what, you're a second term governor. But, like, let's say she wanted to get the base. Like, she could have gone about getting the base by pumping up the issue of needing the base there and Donald Trump not giving it to them. And that is good politics. And I'm sorry. And the other thing is she is the governor. She's the governor of Michigan. Michigan is national politics all day long, up and down. Alibying Donald Trump is not okay. Like, morally not okay.
Yeah, I want to extend that even a little further, just on the politics of it, and setting the morals aside. Though I 100% agree with you on the morally okay, but just to the politics, like. If you're trying to make an assessment that the Democrats need to expand their remit and their you know, what their appeal, like, beyond the people who voted for Kamala Harris, totally agree. And, like, if you feel like you're going to make a bet that you're going to do that by being more populist and Bernie-like, I think that's probably wrong, but I don't know. At least it's a theory. Like, if you're going to say we're going to do this by being more culturally to the center on immigration and crime, I don't 100% agree with that either on policy, but, like, at least that's a theory. And, like, I'm interested in, like, what letting people try that. Like, if you're going to try to do it, like, there are a million different ways. You know, Beto was on Friday and he's just like, I just think the right way is just to campaign in rural places. Okay, I think that's probably not going to work, but whatever, worth a try. All of that is worth a try. What is not worth a try is sucking up to Donald Trump.
That's
because
right.
That is politically wrong. Like, it's not going to work. Like, you have to make right now, April 30th, 2025. The right thing to do is to think about how you think Donald Trump is going to be viewed in 2028. And to me, the answer is he's, God willing, will be absolutely toxic. Like, his presidency is going to be a disaster. And, like, the right thing to do is make a bet that this man's presidency is a disaster and you need to appeal to his voters in other ways besides hugging him and being like, you know, he made some
good
points.
Well, more than that, it's not just about making the bet. It's about making it happen.
Yeah, right.
Like, Gretchen Whitmer has a responsibility to her party and to the country to make Trump, to not alibi him, but to help make him politically toxic.
Yes, true. But I'm just saying, like, is there a safer bet than that Donald Trump is going to be a disaster like at this point? Like, I mean, like, we're on the, I know we're going to get to the economy next, but like, we're on the, or later in the show, but like, we're on the brink of, like, already, in one quarter, you know, we went from GDP plus 2% to negative GDP in one quarter. I know when me and Tony Blinken were laughing about, like, how in one quarter he has thrust Japan and China together.
He's a deal maker, Tim. Yeah, he brings, you know, he makes it happen.
If Donald Trump, like, pulls his shit together and ends up becoming a great president, you know, then I'll do a mea culpa to Gretchen Whitmer in 4 years. But, like, I think it's about as safe of a bet as you can make that you should make all your political actions now on the premise that you have a responsibility to make him a disaster, but that even without you, that he's going to be a disaster. And so you shouldn't do anything that would demonstrate that you were accommodating in any way of that disaster.
All right, guys, this podcast is sponsored by Quince. Being a mom, which I am, of two amazing boys, it is both beautiful and exhausting, which is why a little appreciation on Mother's Day goes a long way. If you want to spoil your mom or me, go straight to Quince. You can buy cashmere sweaters for $50, 14 karat gold jewelry, Italian leather bags, fragrances, and more. Everything is high quality, feels super thoughtful, and it's actually very affordable. The best part, all Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman and passes the savings on to us and or you. And Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabrics and finishes, which I love because you always worry when it's cheap, what are they doing? But nope, they're all good. So, I got to tell you, I was doing Quince before they became a sponsor of our show. I got my favorite leather jacket from there. I get a lot of my undershirts for blazers there. It is great stuff, great quality, and I just really love Quince and very affordable. Thoughtful, timeless, totally her. Shop Mother's Day at Quince. Go to quince.com/thenextlevel for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/thenextlevel to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/thenextlevel. That's how you support our show, guys, so make sure you use that code.
While we are on the subject of Democrats doing great, very smart politics, our colleague Adrian Carrasquillo broke a story moments before we went on air that Hakeem Jeffries has been discouraging other Democrats from going down to El Salvador, which I think was the single most effective thing a Democrat has done so far in the Trump administration. I don't quite know what to say about this. Tim?
Just for people who are like, okay, I mean, this is reporting based on a couple of sources, but I just want to draw your attention to one line here, which is Jeffries' office declined to comment. they could just have said, we can just be candid here about where the bulwark is, right? Like, it's not as if, like, we're out here trying to do hit pieces on Hakeem Jeffries, and if he fucks up, we're going to say so. But it's like, if they have something wrong, if it's like, oh, you know, we have sources, and they go to Jeffries' office, and Jeffries is like, no, people should go to El Salvador. What Chris Van Hollen did was great, and I admire him. You could just say that. And, like, they chose not to. So, like, this, I have no reason to believe that this is not true. And, also, I did notice this, that and I wish I would have pressed Cory on it harder, Cory Booker, last Thursday, because he was planning on going, and he had it.
I remember this, yeah.
Yeah, and I started talking to him, and I just kind of, never assume. You know what they say about assuming. You know, I just kind of assumed that it was like, whatever, a little delayed or whatever. Or he didn't want to double dip on Van Hollen, like right on the tails of him. So we talked about the issue quite a bit, and Cory Booker's was totally aligned with everything you'd want someone to say about this issue. But he didn't go, and it's like in this story that, yeah, they want people to chill out on going to El Salvador. I don't know what I could say about this that is not repetitive of something that I've already said 100 times about it, but you're already seeing Trump's numbers go down on immigration. It is absolutely the right thing to do. But putting aside the politics, I'm doing the inverse of what I said about Gretchen Whitmer. Now putting it aside the politics and just looking at the morals, the only way any of the people wrongfully sent to this torture prison are going to get out of the torture prison is if there's maximum pressure put on Bukele and Trump. That's the only way. Because if people stop talking about this, people move on to talk about kitchen table issues, then the guy with the autism awareness tattoo, the guy that was that accidentally drove into Canada, was disappeared from his family, Andre the hairdresser, all of these people are going to be in that hole forever.
Sarah, can you please just go crazy on this?
Well, so actually, I'm gonna maybe be the JVL.
We need to embed you in the Democratic caucus, I think.
Yeah. So here's what I can understand about Jeffrey's position. Even though I mostly agree with Tim, but I'm gonna try to give the alternative, which is they have made a lot of hay out of this. I'm not sure having a continual train of people going down. Like at some point, it's like, okay, another person's going down. Now, I don't think that they should abandon the issue. I'm not sure if going there over and over again makes sense, right? Like at some point, it starts to look like everyone's just trying to get their like licks in on something as opposed to whatever. And for all we know, the pressure that they've got already is leading to some kind of a deal where like maybe they're going to bring it back. I don't know. I think that there should be ways to keep the pressure on. They should absolutely not take their eye off of getting him back because it's the right thing to do. I'm not convinced that just continuing to go down there helps the issue that much. It might, but I
think
going
down
there.
They've only done it once. Yeah, it isn't like, you know, 15 guys have gone
twice.
Okay.
Twice. And then, this is one of those issues where like maybe Bukele's getting better at the propaganda side of it. Like to me, this is one where it depends a little bit why they're doing it.
Okay. I mean,
very reasonable.
Okay. I don't, it's reasonable, but like, and even in the statement, like these guys keep focusing on Kilmar Abrego Garcia, which I would love to get to the MS Paint tattoo question here in a sec. But like, I think that there is a bigger like message that could also be delivered in El Salvador or elsewhere just about the disappearing of these folks. And even some of these statements from the Congressional Hispanic Caucus and others that are like, oh, I only want access to Kilmar Abrego Garcia. It's like, do we not want proof of life of the other Venezuelans? Like,
well, so this is a good point, actually. So strategically, like, go to Venezuela, like go somewhere else, I guess, is mainly like, don't all keep doing the same thing because it has diminishing returns. It's like, how do you broaden this case? How do you think strategically about getting other people in the mix? Because for a while, right now, part of what's hard, right, is they have done this to so many people accidentally or misidentified, or that it's getting complicated, just like with Trump's court cases, to know which person was sent wrongly where and under what circumstances. And so I think that the thing you've got to figure out is how do you tell the story? Because now there's this four-year-old American citizen with cancer that they sent. And so like, if what he's saying is let's get to some of these other stories and help make it not just about this one guy who has a complicated personal story and get to some of these other things, I could buy that.
I guess I'll say so. But again, I hear your point that you do not want to have repetitive people that are just trying to get their moment in the sun to no end. Like, I totally agree with that. Like that said, I do reject the idea that they've like made some ground on the propaganda campaign here. I mean, this again goes back to like Trump last night. It was where he was on the most defense in the interview with Terry Moran. And for people who haven't seen it, where the ABC host is like, you know, where Trump is like, you guys in the fake news media, this is why people don't trust you. I mean, you didn't see that he has MS-13 tattooed on his finger, on his knuckles. And it's like, no, that was the propaganda, right? With where his own site, I don't know who did it, some Stephen Miller probably, or somebody like wrote in Arial font MS-13 on top of the marijuana leaf and the smile and the cross and the skull. And fucking Grandpa Trump like got tricked by his own staff, yeah, apparently, into believing that the MS-13 that they were trying to show was what those symbols delineated, allegedly. He got tricked into thinking the MS-13 was real and gets mad at the interviewer and starts like screaming at him.
He's not on defense, he's on offense. The guy's trying to move on. The reporter's trying to move on, and Trump keeps being like, it was photoshopped.
Yeah. Terry's like, agree to disagree at one point. And I'm watching it, I go, agree to disagree? No. I mean, it's like, this is insane. And then Trump is like, no. And he keeps pressing. And Trump looks like an insane person. And it's humiliating. I got messaged by a reader today. I'm gonna read this because it was so funny. Who said that when they were in school, as a child, when they were in high school, got into a fight with their boyfriend, where they were certain that if I had $1 million was by Simon and Garfunkel. And the boyfriend said it was, no, it's the Bare Naked Ladies. And she was like, I went to the mat arguing, no, it's Simon and Garfunkel that did I had $1 million. She's like, I'm still mortified by this decades later, thinking about it. I'm like, that was Trump last night? He's like, no, it's really MS-13. So my point is, like, I don't, what are they winning? Are they really winning this battle? His numbers on immigration are going down. To me, it's like, step on the gas right now. I don't know. I think that's the counter view.
Hit him again, Rock.
I think that's right. I just, and maybe you're right that, like, if you look at the statement, it just seems like they're taking the Gavin Newsom approach of this is a distraction. But again, I think it is embarrassing for Democrats if you think it is impossible to be able to say Trump is screwing up both the economy and his immigration policies, because I'm pretty sure you can do both.
Well, let's talk about the economy, because we got some big, big news, double dip of big news today. First, real GDP for first quarter down 0.3%. That's actual contraction. The expectations had been that it was going to drop from like 2 and change to 0.3% net positive. So this
was still bad,
which would have been terrible.
Massive slowdown,
but the reality of it was worse. And this triggered the Trump bleat about how this is Joe Biden's stock market. Those are our two big economic pieces of news. It seems like this is the kind of thing, Sarah, again, I'm just a writer. I'm not a political strategist and a communications specialist the way you guys are. It feels like economy growth negative is pretty easy, even for the mouth breathers on your focus group, which, by the way, over the weekend, I caught up on a couple focus groups, including the Ann Applebaum one, and I wanted to murder those people. Straight murder.
Okay. Yeah.
Sorry.
That sounds like you.
Even they, I think, could understand positive growth, positive growth, positive growth under Biden. Trump is elected. Economy contracts. No?
Yeah, although I mean, they're going to feel it. Like, this is the thing about the economy. It's a lived experience. And this is where, you and I used to, what?
So to speak. I don't know. You're just doing lib talk now, all of a sudden. You know, it's been so long since you're a Republican. You're out here doing lived experience.
Yeah, but I'm doing lived experience related to the economy, okay. Not like, being a woman or what. I'm just saying lived experience in the economy. You exist in the economy.
Yeah.
And so they notice that. And here is something that I think is important when you talk about these voters. We went back and just grabbed a bunch of stuff from Trump's campaign speeches. He promised, it was like within the context of the first 100 days, he promised to lower grocery prices. He promised to get the debt under control. He made all of these promises.
Were those kidding promises, like ending the Ukraine war in 24
hours?
No,
he's
because
just
he said that everybody understood he was kidding with that.
Just
one.
A figure of speech on day one. Yeah. No, these were like pretty hardcore promises that
real,
he made
real
in
promises.
Every speech. Yeah. In every
right.
speech.
Does he tap his nose to signify which kind of promise is which? Or how are we supposed to know?
As soon as he starts talking about Hannibal Lecter, everything that came before it was a joke.
Gotcha.
This is going to matter in all of the ways. And not telling them we're in a recession, but them feeling that we're in a recession. which is why they should have room, which is why they should have room to do the things then. And this is where actually two things real quickly on this from a messaging standpoint. One is just because they live in it doesn't mean you don't have to do the messaging work to make sure everybody understands this is Trump's economy. Because you will notice that Donald Trump, in that bleat that he did, this is Joe Biden's economy. Well, back in January, he bleated, and this is before he even took office, this is my economy already, because the market is so excited about me coming in. And so he owns it when it goes up. He disowns it when it goes down. You have to, he is trying to message against his failures. And so you have to make sure you message into his failures, make sure they are owned by him. So that is one messaging thing, but like, that's easy. Like just that's an easy one. People are unhappy. It's Trump's fault. And then you also can have room to be like, and then there's all the people he's just sending to gulags wrongly, mistakenly, incompetence. It's a story of total incompetence. They can be tied together into one story.
Also, ahead, can I throw out one more thing? I'm sorry, I have one and another thing on Hakeem Jeffries, which is related to the economy, but it's on the Hakeem Jeffries strategy for the Democratic members of Congress listening. I think it's important for everybody to have a little bit of humility about what the impact of their actions are, what it could be, who's listening to them. Like the types of people that are aware of what a random member of Congress does. The types of people that are aware of like the trip that, like, I mean, JVL clearly didn't know about the second trip to El Salvador by four members of Congress, like mid-bench, like people, I'm not talking about AOC, not talking about, you know, Hakeem maybe, but even Hakeem, like the types of people that are aware of what they're doing are people that are super engaged in politics, like people that already know who they support and what they're voting for. Like your congressional members are able to influence elites, right? Like that's what you're able to do with your press conference, like influence elite behavior, right? Influence high engagement behavior. There's a campaign that happens where you try to reach other people through paid advertising. You can reach other people through like what Pete did, going on random cultural podcasts and suffering through for frat bros, doing dick jokes, right? Like there are other strategies you can use. You could do TikTok, right? Like, but like, I this whole fucking idea that it matters like deeply, like whether the press release that comes out of, you know, Troy Carter, my congressman's office, is about tomato prices or about Kilmer Abrego Garcia, like that doesn't matter. Like to Sarah's point, like the economy, like people are going to feel it. People are going to know it, and people are going to know who to blame. Some people refuse to blame that person because they're in a cult, right? Or because they watch North Korea news. And that's going to be a way bigger percentage of people that we want it to be, right? But like the people that you're trying to reach on this stuff, like that's how they're going to be reached. And you can figure out other creative ways to reach them. But like, that's just the reality that I want to.
This is a very, very nice segue, Tim, because you're talking about Democrats, but on the Republican side, Jim Lankford went and said that there are two ways. There are two ways to
only two
influence, and they are to hold press conferences in which you try to warn the administration to stop blowing up the economy. Or do you have private conversations? And I guess the inferred part of that is that what he's doing is having private conversations.
So there's two ways to be able to handle checks and balances. One is to go out and do big press conferences and meetings, and the other one is to go privately to people to be able to sit down and say, how do we actually solve this? Let's actually do input. You'll find a lot of Republicans that are, when they have concerns, when they have questions, they're going to administration officials behind the scenes saying, let me give you some ideas. We are seeing the administration engage in with Congress in ways that we have not seen recently. The real rapid check and balance, whether Republican or Democrat, is always the court. That's the rapid check and balance. When Congress actually does something, the president still has to sign it. So the check and balance to the executive branch is always the judicial branch first, and then it's a matter of processing it through the law.
It does strike me there's a third way, which is to like use your power to vote in the legislature.
Does that strike you?
To do things?
Where are the exact,
maybe I'm wrong.
I just want to get this exact phrase. There's two ways to do checks and balances. One is to do press conferences, and the other is to go privately to people. That's not actually voting. Right.
Not a voting, not a part of this.
That's not actually right. There's one way for Congress to do checks and balances, and it's neither of the two proposals that James Lankford suggested. Like, there are ways for us as podcasters to try to check and balance by speaking publicly or privately, influential or under. But James Lankford is one of the rare 100 people who has an actual ability to do a check and balance, which would be legislative.
So do you guys think, and this is the reason I wanted to ask this, is as we watch Trump's approval go down, is there a point at which the Lankfords of the world would be willing to vote in ways that were checks on Trump? Because in a normal world, yes, right? In normal political world, that's a thing that happens. But in normal political world, the elected members aren't afraid for their lives if they vote a certain way. And they are now. Like, we've heard reports of this over and over and over for a decade. Is there a point at which they feel like, yeah, we can do that, or no?
Maybe. I think it depends on the conditions and which are the things they're taking the vote on. So let's say, hypothetically, that the tariffs are leaving shelves empty, and they've got business owners coming to them constantly saying, do something, do something, do something. We're in a recession. They're going to lose both the Senate and the House in 2026. That's becoming clear because economic catastrophe. Like, then I think maybe they do. Maybe they take a vote. But like, then also they need Democrats with them to like bail them out. Like, it's a complicated thing, and you probably could get enough to pass something if you had all the Democrats and a handful of people who weren't up for re-election, right? They'd like come up with some,
right?
Yeah, that's true, but they'd only need just enough to do that, right? I do think it's a lot. Yeah, so it's tough. It's not tough, yeah, actually. 20. It's very straightforward.
20 out of 53.
Yeah, like that's.
But there are 20 out of 53 that are against the tariffs, and there are 20 out of 53 that are against the Ukraine policy. There are, like, yeah. Just if you had a secret ballot, like, so you do have the votes if they wanted to do it.
Yeah, I did have somebody email me at some point to be like, the solution is that you ought to get Congress to have secret ballots. And I was like, no, there are representatives. Like, we need to know what they're doing. But, like, that's pathetic. That's like, can I just say,
I'm open to creative proposals.
No. I just want one reporter to say to one of these senators, just to look at them dead in the eye and say, what would you say it is you do here? Like, just to give them the old office space, like, what is your job, do you think? Right. Because listening to Lankford, it is maddening. Like, the extent to which it does not compute for him that he has any agency in this whatsoever.
Do you know how many laws they've passed so far in the first 100 days? Laws? Like, actual laws, new laws, the way the government is supposed to work?
Zero? Or wait, what, the extension? The extension?
Yeah, we count the extension. JVL, do you like to guess?
I mean, I couldn't, because in every Congress, they do a bunch of meaningless laws that, you know. Are...
Five. The Lake and Riley Act, which was the one thing that the Democrats gave them at the beginning. Okay. Mm-hmm. Then since then, there was a congressional disapproval for some EPA thing. Okay. And then the Bureau of Ocean Management wanted to protect marine archaeological resources. So they did that. Then they did the continuing resolution. And since the continuing resolution, which was 6 weeks ago, they've done one thing. It was, again, just expressing congressional disapproval about an IRS rule about digital access, digital asset sales. So it was, I think, a pro-crypto thing. So that's it. That's what they've done. Somebody can tell me if I was wrong about what exactly that digital assets thing is. But they've done nothing. Like, they literally have done.
But that's,
they literally have done nothing.
I mean, that is the
I'm pro that. The I'm pro that right now. I'm pro them doing nothing. This particular Senate.
No,
unless what they're going to do is check Trump, which they're not.
The Trump project, though, is about not needing legislative approval to do things.
Right.
It is about centralizing power in the executive, and that means that you don't want to recognize that the legislature needs to act in order for things to happen.
Yeah. I mean, Axios because they don't care, right? So, and they've right. all reoriented their brain where they like their job isn't to pass laws anymore. As James Lankford says, he has two jobs: press conferences or private talks. And like Barrasso and Thune, there was an Axios report on Monday. It was like Barrasso and Thune are going to have a victory lap press conference to discuss all of the accomplishments of the first 100 days. And that's why I knew that there'd been five things passed, because I Googled it. I was like, what have they done? They've done nothing. Like, you don't you have to do something? Like, they kept the government open and they passed the Lake and Riley Act, and they've expressed disapproval about a couple of things. But for to them, they're like, okay, that's great, because the border, because all the executive actions did these things that they claim that they like that are obviously terrible. But like, so they haven't done anything. And so I don't think that, given, I guess let's put it this way. Given that they are unable to codify the things Donald Trump likes, right? Given that they are either unable or unwilling to even pass bills that, you know, are in line with what Trump wants.
Sure. Eliminating USAID.
Yeah. I don't know what would give you any hope that they would pass a bill that counteracted him. And they can't even advance the agenda that they have, like the proactive agenda that they claim to support.
Right.
So I don't, they should be pressured to do this. It is ludicrous, in a like it would make one of you can sing a Hamilton song about this. Like it would make Madison like roll over in his grave that it's like the president would unilaterally throw the country into a recession for no reason besides his like love of the word tariff and his megalomania, and that the legislative body that's supposed to be in charge of the purse would refuse to do a single thing to stop it. Like they could just stop it right now.
They could literally pass the law to take back his power.
It takes 20 Republicans. Just 20. So even they more than half it. Of the Republican caucus could oppose it.
Yeah.
So like they could stop it right now, and they've just decided we're not going to do anything. The only thing we can do is press conferences and talks.
Here's some bad. Other people who can't do
what
anything.
Do you think their back channel talks are like? It's like, please, sir, don't do this. And then,
these guys have no balls. I think it's kind of like, you know, we've really seen some great things, sir. We've really seen some great progress on the border, and we've seen some great progress. And I think the way you're going after China is so good. But, you know, here in Oklahoma, we could really, you know, we could really use a reprieve on X, Y, Z, A, B, C. And like, I sent a list to the staff. And if we could, I think it's probably that.
It's just special dispensation.
Yeah.
It's like basically they're going to do special pleading to get out of the things he's enacting.
Correct.
Yeah.
I don't think that there's anybody. This would actually be an interesting question. This is where I wish we still had Mark Caputo. I'd love to ask Mark Caputo this question. Do you think anybody has actually gone to Donald Trump and said point blank, you need to stop this with the tariffs right now? It's going to ruin your presidency if you keep doing it. Do you think that anyone has just had a blunt conversation, not kind of like a, oh, you know, we got to be worried about the bond markets and maybe we got to dial it back a little bit and like there's some good stuff here? I don't think
only Jared was still there. We could have counted on Jared in his soft voice.
Who would it even be? Like, honestly, who would it even be?
Bessin.
Mnuchin. It would have been Mnuchin.
Yeah, right. Now
there's nobody.
Drivers who switch and save with Progressive could save hundreds. With that kind of money, you could go big time on a fancy water bottle with ultra titanium alloy metal. You're not sure why you need all that. I mean, it just holds water. But you're getting it anyway. Because if you're hiking near an active volcano and you accidentally drop the bottle into molten lava, your water will still be icy cold. Switch to Progressive and you could save big time. For water bottles. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and affiliates. Not available in all states. Potential savings will vary.
Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
Drivers who switch and save with Progressive could save hundreds. With that kind of money, you could go big time on a fancy water bottle with ultra titanium alloy metal. You're not sure why you need all that. I mean, it just holds water, but you're getting it anyway. Because if you're hiking near an active volcano and you accidentally drop the bottle into molten lava, your water will still be icy cold. Switch to Progressive and you could save big time. For water bottles. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and affiliates. Not available in all states. Potential savings will vary.
Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
All right, I want to talk about special dispensations in Amazon, because yesterday word leaked out that Amazon was going to start showing what percentage of prices were due to tariffs. This happened. Caroline Leavitt lost her mind, rushed out to the podium to say that this was a hostile and political action. Trump called up Jeff Bezos, and shortly thereafter, the Amazon spokesman said, no. This was a team that does the ultra low cost Amazon haul store. And they considered the idea, but it was never approved and it was never going to happen. And then Donald Trump came out and said, yeah, Jeff Bezos is nice. Terrific. He solved that problem for me.
And they had a call. apparently.
Right. That's what I'm saying. Like,
I want Sarah's take on Bezos.
So Amazon says this was never going to happen. And Trump says, oh, yeah, they were going to do this, but I made them stop.
Yeah. I want Sarah's take on Bezos before we do, just since you mentioned Caroline Leavitt. Did you see the alternate press conference that they started to have? Have you seen this? They have an alternate press conference now. They have a regular one. And then later in the day, they have one for MAGA influencers.
Oh,
there's this video of Draco Malfoy.
I thought this was an SL skit.
Have you seen Draco Malfoy?
I did see
him asking her about
gay Draco Malfoy?
Yeah. Was Draco not gay? I don't know. I'm not a Harry Potter guy. Was the question about how she's a great mother? And then the other people are laughing.
It's how do you do it all? How do you do it all? What's your advice for other young women? Did you see her answer, which is all about Donald Trump has been so supportive? He's really supportive of young women.
I've heard that.
You're a very high profile young mother who seems to juggle and balance it all beautifully. What advice do you have to young parents out there who are starting their careers, having kids, building families, and trying to find that balance so desperately?
Yeah, well, it's a great question. And first, to the heart of your premise, it's true. The president has empowered not just me as a young mother in this role, but there are so many new moms and dads on our senior staff in the West Wing, but also across the entire administration.
How is this real?
Manually.
Could you imagine if Jen Psaki was hey, we're not going to invite no Peter Ducey today. We're just gonna bring in a couple of the TikTokers.
Who would you even bring in?
Biden.
There were no pro Biden media. Biden would just get shit on by everybody.
There were all
for
the
me.
TikTokers that got mad. Then people in my mentions. There was what's her name? There were a couple of random people that called me a racist for saying that Joe Biden was old. Candidly, Tiff. There were a couple. Mm-hmm. There were some influencers. You could find them, I guess, is what I was saying. But you'd have to really, you'd have to really dig. Anyway,
Of which, just on racism, I get the comments were after me after last week, simply because I didn't say they were exactly the Gestapo. Settle down, guys. It's okay to have a smidge of restraint in our language. Yeah. That does not mean that one is covering for all the racists.
We're Gestapo adjacent.
Okay. Sarah, please. Amazon.
Here's my favorite thing. Is just, remember when Bezos came out and said that their editorial page at the Washington Post is now going to be just about free markets and, free trade? And I'm literally what you are doing is the definition of kleptocracy. He just calls you up and you change your business practices. Now, look, I don't know if any of it's but yes, Donald Trump was able to just get me Bezos on the phone. I don't want Amazon to do this. Hi, guys. That's not how the free market works. It's the opposite of it. Did you know that?
I think that is the free market.
No, it's not, JVL. This is your problem. Your problem with capitalism, JVL, is that you think whatever is happening is capitalism, and it's not. Capitalism has an actual definition, just like conservatism had an actual definition. Nobody who's doing it right now is actually practicing conservatism, and none of these people are practicing capitalism.
I mean, there's this capitalism crony as capitalism. It exists in our minds, I mean, and then there's capitalism as it exists in real life.
It's central planning. I mean, this is state-run government.
Yeah, right, JBL. It's the opposite of capitalism.
Yeah. Where capitalism
free and unfettered markets mean that they are unfettered by the president reaching in and demanding things like this.
Unfettered markets. Sounds nice.
You getting dreamy over there?
I really am.
No. Those things are bad too. They're all bad. Two cheers for capitalism. One and a half cheers for capitalism. All right. So that's it. Jeff Bezos. I mean, I really do think, I've said this before on these shows, what is the point of being this rich? Not to tell people to like go jump in a lake. If I was super rich, and let me tell you, I would love to be super rich. It would be awesome. I'd be like John Goodman in The Gambler. I would be operating from a position of fuck you. You know, somebody calls me up and says like, oh, well, you're going to make $10 billion less. I would say, yeah, that's great. I don't even get out of bed for $10 billion. Fuck off.
They're all like, that's making the joy so of much it, less. Right? They're all making so much less. It's just also they've all lost a lot of money. I keep saying this. It's not about principle even. It's a bad bet. Stop making this bad bet on sucking up to Trump and thinking you're going to get something out of it. It hasn't worked for anybody. Sarah Huckabee Sanders is the only person that has made a deal with Trump and come out on the other side doing better. It's a loser. And JB, I was talking with Pablo and Tori on YouTube about this week, about your team owner, Jeffrey Lurie, the Eagles. In 2018, the Eagles did not go to the White House. And Jeffrey Lurie said, I don't have it in front of me anymore, but it's something like Trump is it's a disastrous presidency or something. It was a disastrous presidency is what he said. And so they didn't show up in 2018. Now, here we are, 2025, and Jeffrey Lurie was up there doing the Gretchen Whitmer thing. Like shaking his hands, like a couple of your offensive guys, Jalen Hurts wasn't there, AJ Brown, like some of the wide receivers weren't there, but the owner is there. And I'm like, why? Like, what? Like, how is it better now than then? Like what? Like, in the intervening 7 years, he's tried an insurrection, been indicted several times, like, is sending people into a gulag, like, he's crushing the economy. Like, what? I the calculus to me is confusing, and I think there are like two ways to look at it. One is like people have just been beaten down, like this is just society now. Maybe it's fear, you know, that like in 2018 he wasn't really scared of this guy, and now it's like, God, who the fuck knows what he's gonna do? Maybe there's a fear element to it. I don't know. Maybe it's just cowardice, human frailty.
There's also a red pilled element, you know.
He's been red pilled. I don't know though.
You don't think Bezos has?
Oh, Bezos has, I think. Yeah. But yeah. I mean, even these other guys, like the Eagles owner, who's like the owner of the Eagles. Sorry. Yeah, no. Yeah. But I do think that, some of them have been red-pilled for sure. But I just mean, like, in addition to that, there's like another category of like, Gretchen Whitmer hasn't been red-pilled. Lurie has. Like, there's a category of people that have just decided that they've accepted this. There's this theory out there, like, pushed by like Scott Jennings, who spoke at the Trump rally, that's like, resistance didn't work last time, and so like now this time you're gonna try, we should try it different. And that's just wrong.
But I love like, that it's the idea of different accepted. Different doesn't have to mean opposite though. It doesn't have to mean like instead of resistance we do acquiescence. It could just mean instead of like the pussy hats in the streets, like we come up with a strategy that is able to build a much bigger coalition. Like, I'm not trying to shit on the Women's March. I'm just saying, like, there are lots of other strategies that aren't just acquiescence.
Donald Trump, who did not campaign on cutting spending, came into office determined to cut $2 trillion in government spending, supposedly. And in his first 100 days, spent $200 billion more than Biden in his first 100 days.
And that is at the point where Biden was still trying to fight COVID.
Hmm.
So he was also spending a lot in his first term, and Trump is still spending more. And I want to talk about this thing because Republicans run, and I tweeted this morning, half the reason that I was a Republican is because I think an enormous amount of debt is unsustainable. I think it's at a national security risk. I think it is bad for us as a country for growth. I don't mind, like you eventually have to pay your bills. And then when you get into these periods of inflation, paying the interest on that debt starts to eat up all of like the stuff that you could be doing things with, right? It is bad for us to carry this much debt. So I remember I had a debt project, you know, back when I was doing Republican stuff, and that was when the debt was $12 trillion. Do you know what the debt is right now?
I haven't been by the clock in by Penn Station. Like 30. In a while.
32 trillion.
Yeah.
It's a lot of trillions, okay? China owns a lot of that debt, and now you've got the dollar weakening. Okay, so here's the thing though. What I want to say is that Doge has been a complete and abject failure across every vector. And I want people to start talking about this, about what a failure this has been. Because the idea was that they were going to cut $2 trillion in spending. He walks that back to $1 trillion because he immediately sees, oh, there's not $2 trillion here to cut. And now we're in this thing where they're like, well, we're cutting waste, fraud, and abuse. And they're like cutting. They've run out of just this is, and this is very similar where Trump's plan, right? We're going to deport immigrants who've committed crimes. Well, then they realized pretty quickly the number of immigrants who'd committed crimes was quite small. And that was easy to dispense with, actually. And it's sort of like for Elon and the people looking at the federal government, they're like, oh, the things that are actually kind of wasteful or even fraudulent or abusive, whatever, is very small. And like, well, we can't stop at this. And so they find themselves doing what the only thing they run into the what is the most obvious problem that literally every president has faced. There's only two places to really, really cut if you're gonna cut our national debt deficit and spending. It's Medicare and it's Social Security. And here's the problem for Republicans. Now, it used to be that Republicans could, and Elon like touched the third rail briefly to call Social Security a Ponzi scheme, backed off that real quick. Here's their problem. Their voters are now more low-income voters. Sorry, did I lean in and get loud?
Yeah, whoa. I was like, sorry. Sarah's getting serious when Social Security privatization comes up.
It's like, I like
get into the camera.
Bring up entitlement reform and Republican Sarah comes out.
This is me. Ooh. This is the stuff that lights me up. The lower-income voters who are now make up a much more dominant part of the Trump coalition, they are on Medicare. They are on Social Security. Obviously everybody's on Social Security at a certain point, but like they care about those federal programs. You can't touch them. And as a Republican, it used to be that you could get a little closer to talking about George W. Bush tried, obviously it fell apart. But this is the third rail of American politics. And in a different world, Trump could be using his lame duckness and everything to like deal with the fact that Social Security will become insolvent at some point in the not too distant future. And it is not a program that can be around forever. But instead, like, they're just not going to talk about it. And so they're not making these cuts. They've just, you know, whatever. They stole everybody's information and they cut a bunch of shit or cut a bunch of programs that actually, like, made a difference. And they still are spending more money. This is important. I did not want to skip this topic. They're still spending more money than Biden did.
But you are granting their premise, which was that they were interested in cutting spending, and they weren't. Spending was never important. What was important was taking over the government and centralizing power within the executive. And that's what the entire Doge thing was. It was, we're going to eliminate any part of the government which might like operate independently of the executive himself in his person. And we're going to try to make it more open to authoritarianism. That was the point of the project. The cutting expenses stuff was just the bullshit reason being given for it.
That was the pretense.
JBL was correct that was the point of the project. I will say though, if you read, which I suffer through, like kind of the fancy pants MAGA rationale for all this sort of stuff.
Have you been reading Orrin Cass?
Yeah, they do say that, and this is the premise here, the pretense they are correct about. That like, and this is part of the reason why they're pressuring Jerome Powell and all this, right? Is that like, that the interest on the debt is unsustainable and that Trump is going to, you know, it's part of the cutting spending, but it's also part of this absurd. They have this thing called, it's like the new Bretton Woods, that they're going to have a Mar-a-Lago accord where they like renegotiate the terms of our debts, so we're paying less. Okay. So they're at least in touch with the reality of the fact that like the interest on the debt costs like continue to go up and it becomes a problem for their project. I concur that their primary project is to take over the federal government and their soft authoritarian aspirations, not like some, you know, blue eye shade concerned about the deficit, but like they do talk about that. And the thing is, and I think it's important for us not to just, and by us, I mean, Democrats and Republicans that oppose this and anybody that comments on this, economic experts, not just let them off the hook and be like, well, they've never been serious about this. It's bullshit. Like, it's important to talk about this and make them own this, because the reconciliation bill, and Jonathan Cohn has a great article about this in our pages the other day, like, is going to be a massive debt bomb. Like, they have there's no agreement on what to cut. Like, they have no agreements on what to cut legislatively, right?
All right.
Nothing. Like there's some people want to cut SNAP, some people want to cut Medicaid. There's no agreement on the Republican side. There is agreement on extending the tax cuts, which is going to cost another $5 trillion on top of the debt. And so, like, there's a range of outcomes, including that they don't get their shit together and reconciliation doesn't pass. I think that's a minority outcome, but possible. They do some cuts that are harmful to their own voters. That's possible. I think the most likely solution is that they just end up deciding, fuck, we can't agree on this stuff. We'll just jam through the tax extender on reconciliation. Yeah. We'll pretend like we can, that'll pay for itself because of the Laffer curve, and just boom. And they're just going to drop another $5 trillion on top of it. And so I think it's in that context, especially, it is important to use their own arguments and words against them about why, like, the interest on the debt issue is so such a big problem for the country.
We also have to talk about Canada, yet another country that is handling its democracy better than we are. It's really great getting shown up on the democracy front over and over and over across the world. The French, the South Koreans, the Canadians, the Brazilians.
Secret voting and the parliamentary system looking more and more appealing to me, but go ahead.
The parliamentary system is looking more appealing, I'm not going to lie. But here's what I love. Not only did Mark Carney win, but Pierre Poilievre lost his seat.
Amazing.
This guy was 10 weeks ago on a glide path to being the next prime minister, and instead he is literally out of elected office. That is a reversal of fortune worthy of the bard himself.
Yeah, and Paul Ryan, you could call up Paul, and he could be on the board of some Canadian conservative.
The Canadian
think
Fox. Whatever Canadian Fox is.
Yeah, whatever.
And, so, Sarah, Tim did a 40-minute show with JJ on this. JJ, I guess, who had just moved into a new house or something. It was a very interesting, his camera setup where he's like,
he was in Toronto. He was.
It was wild. It was great. Sarah, did it give you a lot of feels watching the Canadians handle their business?
Yeah. I mean, here's the thing. I let me just read to you what Donald Trump tweeted the day of the election. Good luck to the great people of Canada. Elect the man who has the strength of wisdom to cut your taxes in half. Was he going to cut them in half? Boy. Increase your military power for free to the highest level in the world, have your car, steel, aluminum, lumber, energy, and all the other business quadruple in size with zero tariffs or taxes. If Canada becomes the cherished 51st state of the United States of America, no more artificially drawn line from many years ago. Guys, I love this, artificially drawn lines. Does this guy love borders or doesn't he love borders? I don't know.
You can't,
look how beautiful.
You know, you can't have a country if you don't have a border.
Look how beautiful this landmass would be. Free access with no border. All positives with no negatives. It was meant to be! America can no longer subsidize Canada with the hundreds of billions of dollars a year that we've been spending in the past. It makes no sense unless Canada is a state. And I bet Paul Vieira was like, no, thank you. No,
stop,
thank you, sir.
Kidding me.
Stop,
I'm
it.
Already dead.
Donald Trump really lost the election for this guy. And over nothing else. I mean, the liberals in Canada had,
Donald Trump ended his career.
Had done a lot to make people mad. Like, people were done with Justin Trudeau. Mm-hmm. They were done with Trudeauism. This guy was going to win. Ended his career. Thank you, Donald Trump.
Ended it. Do you know the funny thing was in the same interview where Trump was talking about how the Russia 24 hours solving the war thing was really just a gag, a funny gag. Like the interviewer then is asking, well, what about the 51st state thing? That's a gag, right? And he's like, no, I'm dead serious. They're meant to be the 51st state. So, you know, it's just a good lesson for anybody who's doing the seriously literally thing, trying to, you know, trying to determine what's a joke and not.
So important as JJ said to you, Tim, this election really did hinge on the idea of, is America a menace? Like that's what it was, a binary choice. Is America a danger to Canada? And Canadians overwhelmingly said yes. And that is shocking. Shocking. I mean, anybody who has spent 40 years watching the relationship between America and Canada, it's like that Canadian politics was settled on the question of, well, crap, is America an actual menace to our freedom? And Canadians concluded that it was.
And in some ways, this relates back to the Gretchen Whitmer topic again. So I'm going to do another and another thing about Gretchen Whitmer. Because fixing all of this requires a total repudiation of Trumpism.
Yes.
Like not just a defeat, but a repudiation, right? In a way. And that's why I remember being kind of sad in 2020 when Joe Biden won.
Yes.
Because I knew, even though he won, that like actually winning the actual fight required a win that was much bigger. That was a total repudiation of Trump. And that's like where we are again. And maybe that'll never happen. I don't know, but that's something that is worth fighting for. That is a noble endeavor, because the Canadian, if you're the Canadians, right? If you're Mark Carney and he wins 2 4-year, let's say he wins 2 4-year terms. Let's say Trump leaves and let's say J.D. Vance wins, right? Let's say they have a real election. There's a handoff and the Democrats nominate a lunatic and J.D. Vance wins and whatever. I don't, you know, who the hell knows what the future holds. And J.D. says, you know, that was more of a Trump thing. The 51st state stuff. Like I want to re-engage with the Canadians. Could you possibly trust that? Or even forget if it was J.D. Vance, it's some other Republican, right? Like some other somebody that worked for Trump or that was so supportive of Trump. If you're a candidate, you're like, I guess we could maybe do a little, some little deals on the side here, but I'm like sleeping with one eye open, you know, like I cannot rebuild in a full way. I cannot rebuild a similar type of alliance with somebody that was the wingman or a supporter of the person that was menacing the country.
Well, also, Tim, it wouldn't be politically feasible because Canadian voters,
great point,
probably wouldn't tolerate it. Right. No. So even if it was, even if it did make sense
to do,
I think it would be politically infeasible. Right. I mean, he's changed the nature of that relationship for a generation.
Turned good friends into bad enemies. Or not bad enemies. They're the Canadians. But
no, they're not our and we're their enemies. It's really something.
Can I just say one really quick thing on this?
Yeah.
Did you see that I was in Mark Carney's ad?
I was gonna say. You and Scott Jennings? Is that who
you
it was?
And Scott Jennings represent all that's wrong with American politics.
I know.
He's like, the Canadians do not want to turn into them where they're at each other's throats and it's Sarah and Scott Jennings yelling at each other.
Yes. Do you know that that just meant a lot to me, though, because that was the day that Scott Jennings said that anti-Semitism was entirely on the left. And that was me telling him, do you remember when Donald Trump invited Nick Fuentes and Kanye West and the other anti-Semites over for dinner at Mar-a-Lago? And I forced him to admit it and to say Donald Trump shouldn't have done that. And then when he put it out on social media, he cut that part out. He edited it selectively. But don't worry, Scott Jennings is going to be the next senator from Kentucky, I presume, because Donald Trump is going to make it so.
He got
and so
paid.
I hope it's worth it.
So this is fascinating to me. One other part on this. Watching that closing ad, which featured you in the B-roll, Mark Carney, who is like, I don't like, he is a, as Trump would say, central casting for a leader. Like, I mean, the guy just looks like he should be head of state or IMF or like, just like this is a guy who's an executive in charge of stuff. Everything about
him. He used to be in charge of IMF.
Like, I think so. Yeah. Or maybe it was the European Bank or something.
Yeah, Bank of England.
Bank of England. Yeah. For him to say, America wants to be weak and divided, that's their business. Up here, we're strong and unified. I was just like, man, that is a dagger, because it's a truth bomb, right? I mean, that is, you know, we've got this guy running around talking about everything is strength and strong, and the country is like getting weaker. Like, you see the seams starting to fray. And it's great. It's all great.
So much weaker. I mean, how will we not look at the good? Who just seems like, is there any objective party that would look at what is happening with China right now and feels like we're in the stronger position? Is there anybody that, I mean, like, that is not just a total MAGA sycophant that would say that we're in the stronger position? I don't think so.
All right. Last thing to hit. This is, God, this is amazing. Pete Hegseth. I'm just going to read it. Let you guys talk about it.
Is this about
this morning? I proudly ended the Women, Peace and Security program inside the Department of Defense. It was yet another woke, divisive social justice Biden initiative that overburdens our commanders and troops. He said that it was pushed by feminists and left wing activists. The Women, Peace and Security program was a law signed by Donald Trump in 2017 that was co-sponsored by Marco Rubio and Kristi Noem.
Ivanka was a big advocate for it as well.
This is a level of, you guys remember the old thing about the Soviets and what they would do with the pictures? And so there'd be a picture of Stalin sitting on a sofa surrounded by his minions. And then as the minions would be unpersoned and sent off to the gulags and shot in the head, that picture would like come down. They would go in and airbrush out whoever had just been disappeared. And so you'd get like a version of the, which was like Stalin on a sofa and a hole. And then another guy standing over here, cause he was the last one left who hadn't been killed. And it was the kind of shameless propaganda. I'm not, propagandizing isn't really what it is, but it's about rewriting the past by the new dictates of the present. And this is as pure a distillation of that as I can possibly imagine. This is our government.
It's great stuff. I mean, I don't want to pretend like I know a lot about the Women Peace Initiative, but like the tone of all of it is also just so, to me, at times with the Draco Malfoy press conference and, you know, like the other thing, like the thing that I was referencing where his chief of staff, Hegseth, before he got fired, was talking about pooping in the Situation Room and like just, and then the Trump unseriousness about the 51st state, like all of this. And then you have the Secretary of Defense, like tweeting like Trump. But it's like, I'm going to do this Trump imitation. It's like, this is weak and woke in all caps. It's like, it's not, this is not how you run anything. You know, this is not how you run a world. This is not how you run the biggest bureaucracy in the world. And it's a fucking embarrassment.
Well, the good news is we don't run the world anymore. So the world is going to be run without us.
Yeah.
That's great.
That's exciting.
Sarah, did you read anything good about American exceptionalism this week?
I did read your newsletter, and oh, when I saw the title, I was like, I'm gonna murder him. And then I only read the first part, which was just like the Van Jones stuff, and I like couldn't. And then it like started, and it was like started with baseball, so I was like, this isn't for me. It's I hate America plus. Tim texted me.
Yeah, I was and he was say, like, and then what happened?
Oh yeah, and then when I put in the Slack, like, you're killing me, man. Tim texted me and he was like, you should read it. It's pretty good, actually. And so I did.
I don't think I said actually.
Thank you. Yeah. This is your newsletter. Sarah uses that word like a dagger with me. The number of times that Sarah's compliments of JVL are punctuated by the word actually is really something.
Actually, no, I did say actually. I'm looking at my text. I did say actually. I was softening it for Sarah. I thought it was a private conversation. Now here we are on the podcast. That said,
I'm dead.
It was really good. We've got one more item. I got to revise and extend something from earlier.
Bring it up.
Since we've been talking, we have an updated statement from the Jeffries team that is doing some damage control on this story. The spokesperson said this is patently false and thinly sourced innuendo, kind of a weird attack given that the spokesperson didn't respond when given the first opportunity, but it's either here nor there. When Leader Jeffries says more is more pushback on this lawless administration, he means it. As Leader Jeffries has repeatedly said, House Democrats will never stop fighting for the release of Mr. Abrego Garcia. And I think Jeffries himself also popped off on this, saying that essentially he's for people doing more, whether that be site visits here or abroad. So there you go. I think a lot of times in these situations, having been on the receiving end of this as a flack, sometimes the sources were wrong. I don't think that's the case here. Sometimes, you know, once something is out into the public, you decide maybe that the public posture should be a little bit different. So there you go. I'm happy that the Jeffries team has cleared that up. And if more folks want to go down to Sikkot, they should. And I'd encourage them to do so. JBL, I know that I said that was the last thing, but I hate doing this on a show where I said I want to hear your take on the Larry Summers interview. And then we moved on and you never gave it to me.
They're going to have to wait. They're going to have to wait.
No, don't do it. They're going to have to wait for the secret. I prepped to figure out that what a ball in a field is. Or what a bowl in a field.
That's great. That's a good tease. They can wait for the secret. You guys can do it on the secret. And then I will listen as a consumer. And by then I will maybe have listened to the full interview without dozing off.
Yeah, unlikely. No, it's an amazing interview. There is a moment very late. This is only in the secret portion of the next level do you get this level of detail, where Larry Summers yawns in the middle of the conference. And we are, you know, two guys who are in their they're in their silver years. They're
Bill is writing years. A daily morning newsletter.
I know.
Okay? Bill's
I know.
Vigorous.
I know. It was great. Larry Summers is allowed to yawn. Guys, hit like, hit subscribe, follow the channel. And if you want to come see us in Nashville or Chicago, Chi-Town, get your tickets soon, because we are on the verge of selling out our biggest venue yet. And it's pretty exciting.
Chicago's about to be sold out any second. So you might have to just everybody come to Nashville.
Guys, we'll see you later. Good luck, America.